Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Senior Chief Ron Pearls, the Director for the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center. And I just want to welcome you this morning to our program. We should have a really good program this morning. We've got a great guest. We'll be talking about him and to him in just a few minutes. But I'd like to continue to talk to you about our new program that we're putting together for the Veterans Museum. We're going to be launching it here the first week in March. It's called Battlefield Expressions PTSD Art Therapy. And so if you haven't been following or if you hadn't heard, we had received a grant from the State of California Arts Council for veterans who are located out in areas that are sheltering in place and things like that. And we had put this grant in back in October of last year before the COVID or anything like that ever raised its ugly head. And the whole idea is for us to be able to reach out to veterans that are continually sheltering in place because of their PTSD, of their war experience, and things along those lines where they just don't want to be in a social situation. They just kind of keep to themselves. And so this program is set up for us to be able to reach out to men and women who have served their nation honorably. It requires an honorable discharge on your DD-214. And it is to allow us to be able to take care of 200 veterans and or veterans family members or veterans widows, Gold Star and Blue Star, and also the children of veterans who have served. And so this program is set up for us to be able to give them art supplies, a full set of art supplies, whether it's watercolor, acrylic, or oil, or sketching, or pastels, for them to be able to come to classes that we are going to put together, or they can just go ahead and they can self-teach themselves and just create at home on their own time during their in their special place at their home. And so this is just a fantastic opportunity for the Northern California Veterans Museum to reach out to our veterans community here in Northern California, especially during this time frame when everybody is sheltering in place and they're not out and about. And so I just want to explain a little information to you. We've got our flyers together. Like I said, this program is going to start in March. In order to be part of the program, we want you to go to the Northern California Veterans Museum website, which is norcalveteransmuseum.org. And you'll go on there. You'll go to the button that says PTSD Art Therapy, and the application is right there on the website. We want you to be able to go through it and do that application on the website. It is first come, first serve, 200 veterans or military family personnel. So if you're interested in this, if you know a family member that that you'd like to involve or that should be interested or should be a part of this program, that is struggling, that might need this help, like I said, the art supplies are free. It's a grant. It's a gift from Northern California Veterans Museum and Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services for us to be able to give these items to these veterans and their family members and then be able to help them expose some of the ugliness of war, to be able to share from their inside to the outside concerning the depression or some of the things that bother them all the time or things that they can't express verbally, but it's an opportunity to express in an artistic manner, artistic way. And so it's so important for us to be able to help our veterans in any manner that we can. And at the end of the program, which will be June, July timeframe of this year, 2021, we will be asking these participants to be able to give back to us one of the artistic pieces that they have painted or they have put together, and that will become part of the PTSD art gallery for the Northern California Veterans Museum. And then we will also be putting together a gala event and displaying these to the public and to our state officials to share with them the creativity of our veterans and some of the healing process of what's taken place. We are also, the Northern California Veterans Museum is also working on bringing the Wall of Honor to Northern California this summer. And so we put a request in, we're searching for dates. And if you're not aware of what the Wall of Honor is, the Wall of Honor is the traveling Vietnam Wall. And this is a commemorative year for Vietnam, for the war, for the men and women who served during that time frame. And the Northern California Veterans Museum is a partnership with the National Vietnam Memorial and Commemorative Society for 2021. And so, once again, it's a part of the healing process. It's a part of honoring our Vietnam veterans. It's a part of making sure that the stories are not forgotten and the men who and women who gave their lives during that time frame are not forgotten. And we have many, many Vietnam veterans that live here in Northern California. And this is one of our opportunities to be able to step forward and to honor these men and women who served. Many, many, if not most of the individuals that came back from the war were not accepted by our society at that time. They were spat on. They were looked down upon. They were ridiculed. They were, the finger was pointed at them as being baby killers and everything else. And the people who did that were cowards. I'll just be straight up with you. If somebody serves this nation honorably and you point the finger at them, you are a coward. And I'll just say it straight up, because coming back from two combat tours in Iraq, I've had people do the same thing to me. And if you had seen the courage and the strength that it took for the men and women to serve their country in conflict during combat under enemy fire in horrific conditions and horrific times, these other individuals could never make it. These people that are out there in our society, that are ripping, tearing down everything that we have right now in our nation, these people are cowards. And those that stand up are not just patriots. They're men. They're women that love this country. You don't have to wear the uniform to defend this nation. You have to be a lover of freedom, a lover of liberty, a lover of what we have in this nation that so many have died for us to be able to have. And it is imperative as we move forward with our program with the Northern California Veterans Museum that we remember and that we honor, and we cherish, and we don't forget. We have the Northern California Veterans Cemetery here where we honor our veterans who have passed. We lay them to rest in a beautiful area that we call Arlington West. If you've never been to the cemetery, I invite you to go out there and visit it, to walk those rolling hills and to see the row upon row of white headstones of the men and women who served this country faithfully and honorably. And then we have the Veterans Home on Knighton Road here in Reading that honors our elderly veterans who have served. And it's a place of honor for them to be able to live out their last days, the last chapter of their lives. And then we have the Veterans Museum as we continue to move forward and we try to get the properties authorized by the county so we can break ground. This spring is what we're really hoping for. And that is the place where we remember. And as long as we remember those who have served, their lives that were given are not forgotten. And it is so important for us to continue to move forward with this entire program. Even though it seems like our national society is going in a different direction, we are continuing to follow our mission to honor our veterans, to support our nation, to honor our God and our families here in our Northern California area. We represent veterans all across our nation, but we live here. And so this is where we honor them. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Tutankhamun, Wonderful Things, Treasures from the Pharaoh's Tomb is open now through September 5th in Reading at Turtle Bay Museum, featuring authentic reproductions of King Tut's ancient Egyptian treasures. Presented by Senator Kay Maurice and Marianne Johannesson in association with the Museum of Ancient Wonders. This exhibition is included with paid park admission, free for Turtle Bay members. Tutankhamun, Wonderful Things, Treasures from the Pharaoh's Tomb, open now through September 5th at Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Shasta County, are you ready for something real special? Mary's Pizza Shack has some changes. We're now Charlie's Tap House, and the Tap House rule number one is come in for the homemade pizzas, pastas, and other house-made specialties, and stay for the beer wall.
Mary's Pizza Shack is now Charlie's Tap House. Pizza, pasta, grill. Same family owners and same homemade recipes. Plus, a few more you'll want to try for yourself. Friday nights, try our special hand-cut prime rib for just $28 with all the fixings. And all week, you can enjoy surf and turf or salmon and polenta.
Don't miss Shasta County's premier tap beer wall with your favorite beers on demand that you can order by the ounce. Try our new house beer collaboration with Woody's Brewing, Flippin' Hazy. Your taste buds will thank you. And when you sign up for our Tap House Rewards program, you'll automatically get $5 off towards your next order. Remember, our vibe is casual. The atmosphere is social.
Order online at charlews.com. That's charlews.com.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Thank you.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and what a fantastic song that was written during the Civil War. It talks about watching and looking across the field at the many fires in the camps of the Union and the Confederate soldiers at night as they were preparing for rest and then the battle the next day. But it talks about keeping your eyes on God and continuing to move forward through such a difficult time, an encouraging time. One of the things we want to talk about, the first thing is about all of the different things that Biden has put in. I don't even want to call him president, but the new administrator of the nation has put in. He's following the footsteps of Barack Obama. And I just want to read an excerpt here. The boost that the atheists have gotten from Barack Obama and now Biden, who include a reference to non-believers in the inaugural address from Obama and also Biden. The USA Today said that Obama's inaugural address presented the first time in inaugural history that an American president has explicitly acknowledged atheists and atheism. You know, and Biden has followed these steps also. Atheism is finding its voice because our culture has become totally secularized. And secularization is not neutral. It's inherently anti-Christian. And so as if you're a Christian, as we move forward and we continue to look at our nation as, I would say our nation is not a godly nation any longer after you see the executive orders that have put in place to be able to take full-term abortion and to take patriotism out of our schools and to not recognize God. But there's nothing constructive about secularization or atheism. Look at what the 20th century most famous atheist did to the world. Lenin, Stalin, Hitler, Mao Zedong. Without God, we can only tear down. We can only take away. With Christ, we're in the business of building up. As Christians face these perilous times, our message is fresh, positive, exciting, energetic, and eminently constructive. Because we know whom our faith comes from. We know where our courage and our strength comes from. In the Old Testament, there's a beautiful passage about shifting seasons of life. One of the statements is, there's a time to tear down and a time to build up. Ecclesiastes 3:3. Within living memory, we've seen generations dedicated to both. Half a century ago, there was a time to build up. The late author Stephen Ambrose wrote extensively about Second World War and a generation of young men who returned home from it. Ambrose's father came home from the war, World War II. He put up a backboard, and a whole squad of ex-GIs from the neighborhood came over regularly to play basketball. Ambrose never remembered their last names, but he remembered scars on their arms and chests. As he reflected on their accomplishments, he wrote, "But in fact, these were the men who built modern America. They had learned to work together in armed services in World War II. They had seen enough destruction. They wanted construction. They built the interstate highways, the St. Lawrence Seaway, the suburbs, and more. They had seen enough killing. They wanted to save lives. They licked polio and made other revolutionary advances in medicine. They had learned in the armed forces virtues of solid organization and teamwork, and the value of individual initiative, inventiveness, and responsibility. They developed the modern corporation while inaugurating revolutionary advances in science and technology and education and public policy." Then came the time to tear down. You've lived through that time, and so have I. Decades of national division. Future generations will look back and see this as a season of wanton destruction from top leadership on down to the man on the street. We're about all the business of demolition rather than construction. We've become adept at poisoning the wells of culture, politics, business, spirituality, and the family, and every other sphere. For reasons unknown, we've begun tearing down everything between ourselves and the horizon. We've torn down our nation's integrity, its purity, its honesty, its respect, our national pride, our ideals, our dreams, our sense of shame, our political aspiration. We've torn down everything we began building at the birth of our nation. It is so critical for us to be able to look forward as we look at these things for us to be in a positive manner. My question to you today is, are you a builder or are you a tear downer? I want to read you a poem, and I think it's real critical if you listen carefully. On a personal level, how are you measuring up with your priorities? And use this little poem as a chart in your life. Think about it. I saw him tearing down a building, a group of men in a busy town. With hefty blow and lusty yell, they swung with zest and the sidewall fell. Asked of the foreman, are these men skilled? The kind you would hire if you had to build? He looked at me and laughed. No, indeed. Unskilled labor is all I need. Why, they can wreck in a day or two what it has taken builders years to do. I asked myself as I went my way, which of these roles have I tried to play? Am I a builder with rule and square, measuring and constructing with skills and care? Or am I the wrecker who walks the town, content with the business of tearing down? So I bring that to you today as we move forward in our community, we move forward in our lives, we move forward with the nation as we see things taking place. I ask you, are you part of the solution or are you part of the problem? Are you a builder or are you a tearer down? How critical is it for us to continue to keep our eyes on the light and continue to move forward, because we've worked so hard for the nation that we've had for our entire lives that we're not going to give it away now. We're not going to let it go. Silence is consent. And so I would ask you to make sure that you keep your voice active and that you keep your voice loud. Because if you don't stand up against the evil things that are taking place out there in our world and in our nation, then you become part of the problem and not the solution. We need to speak up. Now is the time that you need to have the courage to be able to speak up and for your voice to be heard in a positive manner for our nation. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage is now open at their new location at 1773 Highway 273 in the Shasta Gateway Center in Anderson, featuring new and existing vendors. Memory Lane is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and features furniture, jewelry, sports memorabilia, antique desks and dressers, dolls and toys, clothing and hats, along with hand-carved decor, pictures and paintings, and so much more. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage, now open at their new location at 1773 Highway 273 in Anderson in the Gateway Shopping Center.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest this morning is Chuck Kenny. He and his wife are the owners of Shasta Gas Propane. And we're honoring our Vietnam veterans as we move forward, as we have in the past. But we want to remind you that in 2008 was the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War. And as we move forward, this year is the 63rd year, 63 years since the beginning of the Vietnam War. And so if you add 20 years to that, they'll let you know that most of your Vietnam veterans are in the early 80s. Or late 70s, and we've just about lost all of our World War II veterans. Our Korean War veterans are right behind them, and our Vietnam veterans are we're losing probably as many Vietnam veterans as we are Korean War veterans, not because of age, but because of Agent Orange. And Agent Orange continues to raise this ugly head with cancer and with all different types of illnesses that are taking the lives of our Vietnam veterans who served and who are subjected to the spraying, whether they were sprayed in the jungle or whether they were on the sea and they drank the water that was coming out of the Mekong Delta there. That water went into the ocean, and then the ships picked up that water out at sea, and they ran it through their reverse osmosis pumps, which is repo units. Those units took out, they filtered matter and particulates, but they did not filter out the biological chemicals, which was what the Agent Orange was. And so the water was drank by sailors on the open sea and pilots from the aircraft carriers and things like that. So it wasn't just those in the jungle. It was those who served within the proximity of the Agent Orange, wherever that may have been. Even the pilots in the air, as that was sprayed from the air and the defoliant, other pilots would pick that up through their cockpits, and they would breathe that also. And so we want to make sure – I understand the Veterans Service Office has just taken on some new programs for veterans with Agent Orange issues and symptoms like that. So I would encourage you, if you're a Vietnam veteran and you tried to get help for Agent Orange and you haven't received it yet, I would encourage you to go back to the Veterans Service here in Shasta County. And I know right now Tehama County doesn't have a Veterans Service Officer, so I'd encourage you to call Shasta County and get information concerning that. Celestina Traver over there, who is the head of the Veterans Service Office, she has these new programs and new information. And if you are a wife of a Vietnam veteran and your Vietnam veteran is not able to do it, I would ask you as a wife to be an advocate for your husband and or loved one, and to be able to go back and ask for information, because it's so critical that we take care of our veterans who served and those who are subjected to this. Good morning, Chuck. He's getting ready to take a drink of water there. And Chuck, you are a local businessman here. You are a Vietnam veteran. And I just want to say thank you to you for what you do in our community. And welcome this morning.
Well, thank you very much. It's a privilege to be here. It's a privilege to have served my country in the military. And I want to continue doing that service.
Well, I'd like you to tell us that you were a pilot during Vietnam, which is, I was a pilot. I was a civilian pilot. I was never a military pilot. But I also flew helicopters. So I understand that feeling and that exuberation when you're behind a stick and you're lifting off, you raise that collective, boom, you're gone. Tell us a little bit about your family history as far as the military goes, and give us a little story as to how you ended up joining the Army.
Okay, well, my dad served in World War II as a combat engineer. The only story he ever really told me about his service was at one time they were 20 miles ahead of Patton when he was coming through. They were building bridges over the rivers, and they were 20 miles ahead of him because he was going so fast. And the other story was he had the same bridge blown up three times in one night. They would put in the floating pontoons, and the Germans would float an explosive down the creek and blow their bridge up. So he said three times in one night they put that bridge in. But my dad never, as a lot of World War II vets, my dad never really told me stories about it. But in the early 60s, there was, it seemed like, two different segments, the anti-war people and people who had a family history and a love for our country, where that we said, we'll go. And essentially that's what happened to me. I got married when I was 18, still married to the same woman. She hasn't shot me yet. And 55 years this year.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And so I got married at 18, but at 20 I had been in junior college for 2 years. I re-enrolled in the same junior college for the fifth semester. And the draft board in those days was watching that very closely. And so myself and four other friends from Magnolia High School in Anaheim, California, went to L.A. to the induction physical. And within 2 weeks, three of the five of us received draft notices. I did not, but I did not want to end up being a grunt. So I went and enlisted and actually went in the Army as an enlisted guy and went through welding school. And I stayed in Aberdeen, Maryland, instructing welding and metal body repair for a year. And then I re-enlisted for 6 years because I talked to my commanding officer and I wanted to go to flight school. And he said, well, the way you do that is you re-enlist for 6 years. That's a good motivation. Now you go through officer candidate school, which I did, 6 months of engineer officer candidate school.
Where was that located at?
That was in Alexandria, Virginia. Right outside D.C. And it's amazing. You go back there now and what used to be actually forest. Just, I mean, you could see the Washington Monument almost. In fact, from hilltops you could. But we were out running around the woods at night shooting blanks and having fun through officer candidate school. So I graduated from officer candidate school as a second lieutenant and went through Army helicopter flight school. And graduated in 1970. And the career path in those days was helicopter flight school, 30-day leave straight to Vietnam. So I got to Vietnam in May of 1970. That was right at the beginning of the Cambodian incursion. And I spent my first 2 months actually flying in and out of Cambodia every day.
Now, at that time, were we supposed to be in Cambodia?
Actually, we were authorized
were
to be
we
there
at that
time. We were.
Because I know that when we've had Vietnam veterans that come in before, and they were in Laos.
Yeah.
And they were not authorized to be in Laos, but they knew that they were over the border somewhere because they were working with the CIA and doing, watching the Viet Cong and seeing what was taking place at that time.
Well, a lot of us pilots were not very good map readers.
Well, the jungle, there's no line in the jungle.
Right.
It's just green as you go.
That's
so
exactly
it's
right.
Really easy to cross a line from the air.
Exactly. So I spent the first 2 months, and the type aircraft I flew, you were talking about during the break, that you had actually been in the Hughes 500. I spent 900 hours flying the Loach helicopter. Loach is L-O-H, and that stands for Light Observation Helicopter. And I would fly with a Cobra helicopter that was considered to be my cover bird. Essentially, their job was to mark the place where the burning Loach went into the jungle when they got shot down.
Wonderful.
That's kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment. But the job of the pink team, the Loach was a white bird, the Cobra was a red bird. You get red and white, you get a pink. And so the job of the pink team was for the Loach to go out, drop down to treetop level, hover around, try to get shot at, or just find bunkers and trails and things like that, and mark them for either the Cobra to do the shooting or to call in F-4s from the Air Force later if we would find something substantial. But I flew 900 hours. Took full automatic weapons fire 22 different times, took hits in the aircraft 8 times, 6 of those went through the fuel cell. Luckily, by the time I got there, they had put a rubber liner in the fuel cell where it would seal up if it took a bullet.
Right.
And
was there any armament on the Loach at all? Probably just combat seats?
The pilot seat had armament to about halfway between your hip and your knee. And then slightly above your leg while you were in the seat, and right up to about just below your shoulder and your back, of course. But the guy in the back had nothing, and the way that we were configured, the pilot was in the right front seat. There was an enlisted observer in the left front seat, so my aircraft was a single pilot bird.
Yes.
So the pilot got whacked.
Everybody went down.
Yeah, everybody went down.
We're getting ready to come up on a break here. Chuck, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month, starting at 8 a.m., for the Gorman Law Hour, featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Hello, I'm Chris Christopherson. On November 8, 1965, the 173rd Airborne Brigade on Operation Hump, War Zone D in Vietnam, were ambushed by over 1,200 VC. 48 American soldiers lost their lives. Severely wounded and risking his own life, Lawrence Joel, a medic, was the first living black man since the Spanish-American War to receive the United States Medal of Honor for saving so many lives in the midst of battle that day. Our friend Niles Harris, retired 25 years United States Army, the guy who gave Big Kenny his top hat, was one of the wounded who lived. This song is his story. Caught in the action of kill or be killed, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his brother.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, the 8th of November, our Vietnam veterans. You know, there's many times during the day and night when flashbacks just come back. I'm just back in Iraq. I'm just back in a situation. And I know that our Vietnam veterans, and I'm sure that yourself also, Chuck, there's times when you're right in the flight path for the runway. So when those Black Hawks fly over or the 500s from J&J, a P&L aircraft down in Red Bluff, they fly those 500s right down, 500Es right down the freeway. And every time I hear one, I just go outside and look because there's just a certain sound to it, the tail rotor and the main rotor. Or when the Black Hawks fly over, the Black Hawks take me right back to Iraq. And when the forestry flies the Cobras, they flew the CH-47s, and the Super Cobras would fly overhead. They would orbit while the CH-47s landed and did the medical retreat. And for the for picking up the nylon for those that were injured by IEDs or anything else like that. And it just brings it right back. And so that's part of what our program is for the Battlefield Expressions PTSD therapy, because we have veterans that are out there that still experience the war every day on a certain level. Some days it's worse. Some days it's not. We did all of our convoy missions at night. So at night is when the devil raises its ugly head, and I deal with a lot of that at night. So lots of times I don't sleep. I'm just awake because I'm just back in Iraq. And so it's so important for us with this program to reach out to our veterans and our community to allow them to come back and be able to express themselves and help with this healing process. And I'm sure as we talk to you this morning, there's going to be times when you think back to the experiences when you're flying a helicopter and you're there in country, and those things are just, they're living chapters of our lives. They don't go away.
Well, that's quite true. And the fact of the matter is that I went back to Vietnam in 2009 as a tourist just to look around and see what it looked like now. Prior to that time, unless someone was a military veteran, I didn't share any stories at all. When I went back there, the good Lord opened my heart and did a little work in my head. And first thing I realized, and there are some vets today that still are not quite at this point, but the thing that I realized is that they're just people like we are, Vietnamese. And thank God for them. Essentially, they want to get married, love their wife, have kids, and live a good life. I've now been back four times, and every time I go, it helps me get over a little more of some of those feelings, you know, that we brought back with us
sure.
in the 60s and 70s. So I thank God for that opportunity to have gone and done that. And we had, I don't know at what point we want to start talking about some of the things that we found. Maybe we'll save that for a little later, but we went on a trip out to the Ashaw Valley for those vets who served there, and we actually are looking for some MIAs there, and I want to share that story before the end of our program.
Yes, and I want you to expand on that. Excuse me, expound on that as we move forward. I'd like to take you back to when you first got in the country and you started flying. You know, did you learn in 47 the C-47, the small, or did you learn to fly in the 300 or the Schweitzer 269?
No, I learned to fly in the. Let me think about it. It was not in the Schweitzer. It was called the Raven, the OH-23, not the 13. The 23 had the angled tail boom, and it had a drive shaft that went from this vertical six-cylinder engine back to the midway on the tail
boom. Is that like an Estrom?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the original manufacturer name, yeah. So, no, what they did in those days was if you were a taller guy, you learned in the 23. If you were a shorter guy, you learned in the 300, the Hughes 300. And it was kind of funny because I know a couple of guys who there's another scout pilot lives here in town, friend of mine, but he actually trained in the 300, and then when he got in country, they put him in the Loach. But I trained in the other one because I was taller than most of the guys in my class in that area. And so when I got in country, I'd never been in a 300. I did all of my training in the OH-23 and then in the Bell 13, which is the open tail boom. We got our instrument training in that aircraft. And then I went straight into turbines, into the Huey, and flew in the B model. And we didn't have Charlie models in training. We had the B model, and then the D model, Delta model, in those days was a single engine. What was it, 1,100 horsepower? I think eventually they went to 1,300 horsepower. And that was the reason that they carried four crew members and sometimes only four infantry guys with all their packs
wow.
and weapons and everything else. So, but I got most of my training, or I got, you know, all my turbine training in the Huey, which I still love to this day.
Oh, sure.
But I got to tell you, my true love is the Hughes 500,
right.
The Loach.
Like we were talking earlier, the 500 is like flying a Ferrari. I mean, it's extremely responsive. It goes where you want it to go immediately.
And it had the power to do the job that it called on us to do. When they first went over there and they were flying what we called the scout mission, or to fly at treetop level, low level, to eyeball, you know, the enemy face to face, the Bell 13, in a lot of cases, once you got a gunner with some M60 weapon and ammo on the other side of that helicopter, it could barely get off the ground.
A dog.
Yeah. And in some cases, they had to skid along the runway to get some forward airspeed before they could get up off the ground. Well, when you got into a Hughes 500, you could take everything and the kitchen sink with you. So our particular crew load was the pilot was in the right front seat. The observer, enlisted observer, was in the left front seat carrying an M16 and a hot smoke, a smoke grenade that you pulled a pin out of so that when you took fire, he could immediately drop that out and mark the target for the Cobra that was circling overhead. The enlisted gunner was sitting on the floor in the back shooting a stripped-down M60 machine gun left-handed. And that did create its own set of problems.
Sure.
But
yeah.
We were talking about armament before we went to the last break. All he had was some armor plating that we stole off of Crash Huey's that he would set on. Other than that, he was hanging out in the wide open spaces.
Chuck, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Agnew in Washington. Britain says Russian naval forces are firing into Ukraine. We get more from correspondent Charles de la Desmond.
Britain's Ministry of Defense says Russian naval forces are launching cruise missiles into Ukraine to support military operations in the eastern Donbass region and around the cities of Mariupol and Mykolaiv. At a morning briefing, the ministry adds, Russia's air forces are expected to increase activity in the south and east of Ukraine to further support these operations. Officials also say Russia's continuing to attack non-combatants, such as those killed at the Kramatorsk railway station in a rocket strike on Friday. Charles de la Desma, London.
In an address to his country last night, Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky
carried out a missile strike on a train station in Kramatorsk. 38 people were killed at the site. 12 people died in hospitals during the day.
He talked about the latest attack and said that he is going to work hard to make sure that those who carried out the attack are facing justice. He says he spoke with the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and urged the EU to impose a full embargo now on Russian oil and gas. Many U.S. voters say America's violent crime problem is getting worse. And as Bernie Bennett reports, overwhelmingly, voters say that it's going to be an important issue in the midterm elections.
The latest Rasmussen Report's national telephone and online survey finds that 61% of likely U.S. voters believe the problem of violent crime in America is getting worse. Only 11% think the crime problem is getting better, while 26% think the crime problem is staying about the same. These findings have changed little since February. The survey of 1,000 likely U.S. voters was conducted between April 4th and 5th. The margin of error was plus or minus 3% with a 95% level of confidence. Bernie Bennett reporting.
And Republicans are hoping to regain the majorities in the Senate and House. More from townhall.com.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshares. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, well, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, founder and CEO of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare. In the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. Sounds crazy, right? Well, the crazy thing is, this never ends. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. I guarantee if we can't cancel your timeshare, you'll pay nothing.
Were you lied to when buying a timeshare and want out? Get the facts about timeshare cancellation. Call Wesley now for your free information kit. 800-691-9999. 800-691-9999. 800-691-9999.
Some very wealthy people in space these days.
SpaceX has launched three rich businessmen and their astronaut escort to the International Space Station for more than a week's stay. It is SpaceX's first private charter flight to the orbiting lab after 2 years of taking astronauts there for NASA. The American, Canadian, and Israeli executives are paying $55 million each for the rocket ride and their stay. Jason Walker reporting.
The price is going up for disrupting airline flights. The Federal Aviation Administration is working on record civil fines against two passengers who assaulted other people on flights last summer. In one case, a woman tried to open a cabin door, then headbutted and spit at crew members and passengers. The FAA is seeking to fine her $82,000. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. A former prep school administrator who took students' college entrance exams for bribes has been sentenced to time behind bars after pleading guilty to fraud and money laundering conspiracy charges.
Mark Rydell has been sentenced to 4 months in prison. Rydell apologized in court Friday to the students who lost out on college opportunities because of what he called a terrible decision. Rydell, a Harvard graduate, admitted to secretly taking the ACT and SAT in place of students or correcting their answers. In another case, a federal jury in Boston convicted former University of Southern California water polo coach Jovan Vavage of fraud and bribery. Vavage received about $250,000 in bribes for designating unqualified students as water polo recruits so they could attend USC. I'm Mike Hempen.
More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. And our host this morning is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. And we've been talking about Chuck's service during Vietnam. We were talking about flying the helicopters, your early models where you're first learning, and some of the stories about your transition into Vietnam. And tell us a little bit, as you can, about when you first got into country and some of your experiences dealing with the enemy and things like that as war and battle started to impress itself upon you.
Well, the first thing that happened after flying from New Jersey through Alaska and landing in Vietnam, and they opened the door up on that 707 aircraft, you know, we were stuck in there like sardines.
Right, for hours.
And stepped out, and from the door of the aircraft to the terminal, it was probably about 50 yards, and by the time I got out into that heat and humidity, the sweat under my armpits went all the way down to my belt. I mean, you just immediately, the heat and humidity, worse than anything that I had ever seen, you know, in the Midwest and South while I was in the service. So absolutely amazing. But the funny thing that happens in the military, and anyone that's been in the military can relate to this, when I got to the replacement company, they said, well, where do you want to go? And the dream sheet, you know, what do you want to do? And so I said, well, I want to go anywhere but the first Cav. Those guys are nuts, the first Cavalry Division. They're always out in front, and they're doing crazy stuff. And I want to fly, you know, ash and trash. I want to fly the colonels around and, you know, maybe sleep in a nice bed at night. And they said, okay, well, here you go. You're going to the first Cav. I got to the first Cav Division headquarters, and they said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to fly Hueys for 6 months, and then I want to fly Cobras, you know, flying guns. That's really cool, you know. And they said, I'll go anywhere but first of the ninth, because the first of the ninth, those are those guys that are out front, and they're getting into stuff first, and they discover and all that. Anywhere but the first of the ninth. And I ended up at the first of the ninth.
Reverse psychology. Psychology
yeah.
Didn't work.
And, you know, I didn't learn at by that point. You know, you need to change your technique here. I get to the first of the night. They said, well, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? And I said, well, Alpha Troop is out in Tay Ninh in this nice white sand out there and everything. And Charlie Troop is here at headquarters in Phuc Vinh. And the only problem is it's called Rocket City. But I'll go anywhere but Bravo Troop. Those guys are up at Quan Loi. And it's muddy in the winter, and it is red dust in the summer, and it is ugly. I'll go anywhere but Bravo Troop. And I went straight to Bravo Troop. And so I got to Bravo Troop at about 9 o'clock at night, and there was a single light bulb hanging over the commanding officer, and he's interviewing me, and he said, well, Mr. Kenny, Captain, Lieutenant Kenny, actually Butterbar Lieutenant at that point, what do you want to do? I said, well, I want to fly the Huey for 6 months, and then I want to get into guns, because that'd be really cool to shoot, you know, fly Cobras and shoot rockets. And he leaned around the corner and said, well, First Sergeant, Lieutenant Kenny here is going to be a scout pilot. And there I was. And the next day, actually, I flew with the troop commander the next day in a Charlie model Huey, and we shot a few rockets, and it was exciting. But, yeah, I ended up flying in the scouts, and I ended up doing that for 9 months. And the last 3 months in country, I actually went to squadron headquarters as the Loach instructor pilot, transition pilot. I didn't get the opportunity to do a transition. They put me in the cockpit and said, watch and don't touch anything and keep your mouth shut, and eventually you'll be over in the right seat as the pilot. So I spent my first 2 months actually flying in and out of Cambodia. And within about 3 weeks, I was the pilot in charge of that little aircraft.
It's always amazed me that if you're a second pilot, you're told to sit there and sit on your hands. Don't touch the instruments. Don't touch the knobs. Don't touch the dials. And don't say a word.
Yeah.
And it's like, boy, there's never anybody just says, okay, here's the control. This is what you do. Da, 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 da. Never.
Yeah.
It's always, you're going to sit there and you're going to observe and you're going to sit on your hands. Co-pilot. In fact, there's co-pilots that sat on their hands their entire duty as a co-pilot.
Yeah.
They were never given the opportunity to have stick time.
Yeah. My wife still refers to me as a control freak, you know, because I still have the controls in most situations.
Right.
Or at least try to. So I spent my first 2 months flying in and out of Cambodia, and one of the funny stories that I tell. How much time do we have?
We have 3 minutes.
Okay. So I was flying, and we couldn't read the map, and we were only supposed to be like 3 miles inside Cambodia, and I think we were about 20 miles inside Cambodia. Terrible map readers in the first CAD division. But we were at treetop level, and someone shot at us, and the bullet went through the radios between the pilot and I. I was on the left seat, not touching anything except my M16 and a smoke grenade. And the bullet went through the radio and actually ricocheted off of my pedals, which, you know, you're supposed to have your feet on the pedals. Luckily, I wasn't flying at that point, or I'd have been hit in the foot. But I was leaning out the door looking down through the trees at the ground, and this bullet went right through a red smoke grenade that was hanging less than a foot from my face. And so as soon as we took fire, the pilot starts screaming, "Taking fire, taking fire." And then he said, "We're going down, going down." And so I just sat back in my seat because I knew we were going to crash, and I just wanted to be kind of ready
prepared
for that. And shut my eyes, you know, and waited to crash, and we didn't crash. So I opened my eyes, but what happened was that bullet went through that red smoke grenade, set it off, which it doesn't explode. It just starts emitting the red smoke
right
in the cockpit. My side of the cockpit filled up with red smoke. I thought I had taken the bullet in the head, and my eyeballs filled up with blood.
Oh, my goodness.
All I could see was red. And I laugh about it now.
Right. It was no laughing matter.
Not a laughing matter.
No.
Then, so. But that's my funny story. I've got a number of stories that I can share.
So when it was emitting smoke, did it catch the cockpit on fire?
No. What happened was the pilot reached over and smacked me in the helmet and said, "Throw that thing out." So I, of course, forgot to throw mine out when we first took fire. So I'm still holding on to the one that I was supposed to drop.
Was the pin pulled in yours?
And the pin was pulled.
Yes, and you're hanging onto the spoon.
Yeah. And so I had to reach up and grab the one that's emitting the smoke, which, by the way, they burn.
Oh, right.
At that point.
I was going to say,
hot.
You had gloves on, didn't you?
Yeah.
Your flight
did.
Gloves?
Yeah. So I went ahead and threw it out. So I just didn't mark the place where we got shot.
Right. You were in process. We're out of time again already. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m. on KCNR, 1460 a.m., or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe. Or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
My daddy was a soldier in a foreign war, but he doesn't like to talk about it anymore. He kept a picture of my mama right by his heart. He gave it one last look before the fighting would start. He said, all I ask is that you don't forget, 'cause the war's not over when the fighting ends. There's a part of me that will always be just a boy in a hole with an M16, airborne ranger infantry. I left my best friend lying in a pool of blood while I crawled away through the brush and mud. If I could choose to go back again, I'd die lying there next to him. Still see his face when I close my eyes. The part of me that will always be just a boy in a hole with an M16, airborne ranger infantry.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest this morning is Chuck Kenny, Vietnam veteran, pilot, extraordinaire entrepreneur here in our Northern California area. Chuck, before we continue on talking about your helicopter service during Vietnam, I want to say welcome home.
Well, thank you very much.
And I want to say thank you for your service to our nation and to your fellow soldiers and pilots and to the rest of us who serve our nation. You represent all of our veterans now in our community. And we don't say thank you to ourselves enough. We come back and we try to integrate our lives back into some type of normalcy. And it's very difficult for us to be able to do that. I struggled immensely when I first came home. And one of the only healing parts that really helped me was when I started doing Navy funerals out at the Veterans Cemetery. Mm. And between 2007 and 2013, we performed over 2,000 military services.
Oh, wow.
And presentations of the flag to multiple branches. But it's sometimes the only thank you that we get is from one veteran to the other because of the experience, because of the uniform, because of the mindset,
right,
because of the patriotism, the love of country, and because our lives, our minds are vaults of memories. Things that we experience, I kind of look at it like a filing cabinet in my life. There's different drawers. And each drawer contains different stories and different experiences. And so some drawers are good drawers.
Yeah.
Some drawers are bad drawers. Some drawers you never open up. And some drawers accidentally open up.
Yeah.
And that's part of dealing with the PTSD, dealing with just life stress, and the combat stress and things like that. Because the op tempo of being in the combat zone, especially when you're under duress, if you're on a certain operation and that operation is continuous for so many days and so many hours and everything else, I'm sure that as you were flying, there was probably many of those where you were flying many, many hours per day.
Well, the Army only wanted pilots flying a maximum 130 hours in a 30-day period during Vietnam. At one point, after we came out of Cambodia, we were so short on pilots that I got 160 hours in a 30-day period. And when that happens, people start having accidents.
Sure.
You know, and things like that. So eventually I got to the point where they grounded me for 3 days in order to get my hours back under that 130. But, you know, when you are in it and you're what they have. You're the asset they have. You do whatever needs to be done.
So when you're out there 20 miles into the next country and you're flying so many hours, how were you guys? I know you guys were probably flying. You were refueling hot in certain locations. Were there certain locations where you could fly where you weren't coming back all the way back to your home location?
Well, our home location was near the Parrots Peak in Three Corps. And so we were not that far from the Cambodian border. And although they had some fire bases out much closer to the border, they didn't put any, you know, semi-permanent fire bases actually in Cambodia. At least we never landed at any. You know, they may have had some wide spots where they could put troops in and get troops back out. But as far as refuel stations and things like that, there, I never went to any in Cambodia.
So when you were out of fuel, you were done with your mission?
Yeah, we had a 2.5 hour fuel load. And so each mission was 2 hours. We had to have that spare, especially during monsoon. You're allowed to get, you know, rain where you got to fly around it if you can.
If you can even see.
If you can see.
Yeah.
Or you get down on, you know, closer to treetop level and fly slow and get back in. So we always had a 30-minute, or we were supposed to have a 30-minute fuel reserve. Yeah.
Do you ever have any close calls with other aircraft or
Well, just young guys,
just experiences.
Yeah, young guys do stupid things, you know. One time we had a scramble where we had an aircraft got shot down. The scramble is everybody runs to their aircraft, get in it, crank it, and fly out to save those people that are on the ground. Either, you know, provide cover fire. The Loach would, although we did one time have an infantry platoon in contact after they had done a B-52 strike, and there was this huge, they had a big bomb that had actually blown a hole in the canopy, and it, the trees were 300 feet tall. Well, what happened, they couldn't march the troops in. They rappelled them in on ropes. Well, as soon as they got in, they came under fire.
Right.
And then what happened, their lieutenant had been wounded and medevaced out. Then we have to get those troops out, and they can't march out. They didn't have enough ammo or anything else, and it was too far. They had us Loaches dump all of our ammo out and single pilot, empty bird, fly in and load three of those grunts in our helicopter. We had to do a 300-foot hover down, load those guys in at a hover because it was uneven ground in a bomb crater.
So muddy.
And whatnot, and then we had to hover back up through those trees. And what happened was I actually had five guys in the aircraft, and I over-torqued the transmission, and they had to replace it that
night. I was going to ask you if you had ever over-torqued it.
Yes, they had to replace that transmission that night. And as I was coming up to the top, I'm getting out of what's called ground effect,
right,
where you get a little support from the air under your blades. As I was getting up to the top, I'm getting out of any kind of ground effect. My RPM started bleeding off.
So it started to settle with power?
Oh, my goodness. It was getting real close. And at that point, I was able to bend it over and get some forward airspeed and fly out of it. But, yeah, the maintenance tent was not happy with me having to replace that transmission that night. So,
well, it's like we were talking about earlier. There's so many things flying that you have to be careful of just as flying. And now you add all of the parameters of war to that, and now you're just trying to it becomes a survivability factor.
Exactly.
The capability of yourself and the capability of the aircraft. And your pilot, you're enough knowledge for you as a pilot to be able to instantly know, okay, what do I have to do to get out of here before I eat it?
Yes, exactly.
So,
well, I got to tell you, there were a lot of fine young men that went through flight school. There were pilots in Vietnam flying Hueys with lives essentially under their control in the back that were 19 and 20 years
sure,
old.
Sure, yes.
And those kids, us kids, I was 22. I was an old guy. By the time I got there, I was 22 and 23. But, you know, they didn't have enough sense not to fly into those areas. And it was a matter of a lot of fine young men like that saved a lot of lives just because they flew in not worrying about themselves.
Right.
And that's the way it is. That is the military culture. And that is that family thing that is developed in the military. I got your back. You got mine. We'll take care of each other.
Well, there's old pilots and there's bold pilots, but there's not very many old bold pilots.
That is true.
So that's one of the things one of my instructors always told me is better be on the ground wishing you were in the air than to be in the air wishing you were on the ground.
That is exactly right.
Because it happens so fast, and you know, and then the adrenaline kicks in, and you're doing everything in your mindset to be able to control, because you're in control.
Yeah.
Or you're out of control.
Exactly.
But you're behind the stick. So you basically, every time you raise off the ground, you're controlling your destiny.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things as a pilot that I tried to work with my military career. Being a pilot really helped me with my just regular military career. is that there's no such thing as good luck. You create your luck.
That's right.
And it's decisions that you make, and it's forward thought, and it's preparation, and it's understanding where you're at so that you can manipulate certain things to get you through difficult times and whatever else.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing when you're flying an aircraft. You are in control. Yeah. Your destiny is at your fingertips, and you have to have that knowledge. You have to know your capability, and you have to have faith in yeah. yourself, because if you don't have enough faith in yourself, you're not going to even get off the ground because you're afraid.
In yourself and your aircraft and your crew, because it's a team effort.
Yes.
So, yes, exactly. So, yeah, it was a great opportunity. There are a lot of other stories you could tell as far as close calls. We did do a bunch of stupid things, you know, flying that particular aircraft. I would hover down under the canopy of trees in some cases. There was a section of our area where the Ho Chi Minh Trail came through the bottom of a valley, and they actually cut bamboo poles that were 6 to 8 feet long and would latch those together to get across water or boggy, muddy areas. And I flew along at a hover one time over that section of the trail, and there was a bunker about every 20 to 50 feet.
Wow.
And we were at a dead hover, you know, just flying sideways. I was using my rotor wash to get the trees out of the way so I could see. At any point, there could have been someone in one of those bunkers shooting back. Thank God that there was not. So we got out of that. But that was one of those things where I think back now, it was just the hand of God that brought me through that and my crew.
Unless you've experienced that, it's really hard to describe, because there's times in your lives, especially when you're in a combat situation, where you know the only reason that you made it back that night was because of a superior force, because we don't have that capability as individuals.
That's right.
You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Veterans, did you know that Shasta County Veterans Service Office is open to all veterans who have served our nation? Whether a combat veteran or a member of the reserves with limited active duty time, you have earned benefits. If you have any military benefit or veteran-related questions, call 530-225-5616 or stop by Shasta County Veterans Service Office at 1855 Shasta Street, Redding, California. This message is brought to you by Korean War veteran Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary, California Veterans Affairs.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642. Or online at homecomfort.org, and they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Go big to feed your dinner bear with Black Bear Diner's brand new wow-sized 14-ounce USDA Choice Porterhouse Steak Dinner. Served with veggies and your choice of side, including our brand new house-made creamy cheddar cheese mac and cheese. This dinner will fill your plate and your belly. Get it now at Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive in Redding.
Black Bear Diner.
I know you're worn, I know you're torn. You're losing all your hope, 'cause you're a long way from home. Oh, I know you're worried, I know you're scared. I'd like to put my arms around you, tell you I care. Hope is in heaven, not far away. Just close your eyes, he hears what you say. Feel him around you, he's everywhere. Reaching to touch you, know that he's there. Deep in the heart of a wound, he hears a soul. Protect you, God, where you go, keep you from evil, tears at your soul. Oh, speak to the Father, say what's on your mind. It just takes a moment, if you take the time. Hope is in heaven, not far away, just close.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and we're continuing our conversation with Chuck Kenny. He's the, he and his wife are the owners of Shasta Gas Propane, Vietnam veteran, pilot, a captain when he retired or when he finally left the Army. And Chuck, we've been talking about these, all these experiences, and we really haven't touched on a lot of the bad things, but we don't really want to go touch a lot of the ugly stuff, even though we know the ugly stuff is all over out there. I want to talk a little bit right now about you coming home and coming back and integrating with your family, and maybe a little bit of how you were treated by the society when you first came back.
So I actually went to the replacement company in Vietnam, and because they were drawing down, that was in May of 71, they were drawing down our troop levels at that time. And so you got to the replacement company, and you got first in, first out. Well, I actually spent 1 year and 1 day, because there were guys who had only been in country 6 months, but they shipped their entire unit home. They got to go home at 6 months. The average tour, except for the Marines, those Marines, they like to do those 13-month or 18-month tours.
Just
you
like
know how
Iraq.
Those guys
yep,
are.
They still do.
Yeah. But the Army, it was a 365-day tour if you made it that long. But I actually spent that extra day at the replacement company. We were waiting. They were sending aircraft in empty to bring us back home. And I actually landed at Travis Air Force Base, and I have changed my attitude about that because I just had a hip replacement surgery down at Travis, and they treated me like gold.
Good.
It's wonderful. So any vets that have VA coverage, if you need a surgery that you can't get here locally, try Travis. They are wonderful. But landed at Travis Air Force Base and drove from there in a cab over to SFO, San Francisco Airport. And in the airport, there were a bunch of anti-war protesters, and luckily there were a bunch of MPs there, and the MPs were there to keep us from thumping the crap out of the anti-war protesters. But I flew from San Francisco back to Massachusetts, Boston Airport, and my wife was waiting there for me with my son, who was at that point a year and 4 months old, and a brand new baby daughter. I got her pregnant before I left for Vietnam. And so she had a brand new baby daughter that was almost 4 months old, somewhere in there. And, I'd never seen her.
Wow.
So my wife and my in-laws and my two babies were there to greet me.
Wonderful.
And, so we had 30-day leave, and then I went to Fort Linwood, Missouri, and then I got out of the Army. I actually had 13 months left on my commitment after flight school, but the Army was cutting back on commissioned officer pilots at that time. So they gave me the opportunity to get out 13 months early. And the unspoken word was, well, you can get out 13 months earlier, or what could we do with you for another 12 months, which looked just like a second tour.
Right.
And I knew God was gracious to me the first time around, and I didn't want to, you know, overtax my guardian angels. Yeah. So I took the opportunity to get out 13 months early. I will say that after getting out, we got into a little Baptist church in southwest Missouri. I did not move back to California. Got into a little Baptist church in southwest Missouri, and I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior because the preacher was talking about, you know, if you don't, you're going to go to hell. And
right.
I'd already been to hell once, and essentially.
You did not want to go back.
I did not want to go back, so I became a Christian, ended up dedicating my life to the Lord, going
you know,
off.
Chuck, there are no atheists in the foxhole.
That's exactly right.
I don't care what anybody says.
That's right. They are talking to God, saying, help me out of
that's
it.
Right.
But I ended up going, surrendering my life to the Lord, went off to Bible college in Springfield, Missouri, and 3 years later moved back to California where I never wanted to go again, but I figured, you know, I'll just charge hell with a squirt gun, you know, go back to L.A. And although there are some great churches in the L.A. basin and whatnot, but my little fundamental Bible college, you know, we... when it's too tough for everyone else, it's just right for us.
Right.
You know, we're going to march into hell. And so anyway, we moved back to L.A., and I started a church and pastored for 3 years. I want to say this to the young veterans, the Iraq, Afghanistan guys. It was about 8 or 10 years after I got out of the Army, after I got back from Vietnam, I should say, that I got out, went to Bible college, pastored a church. I discovered I had PTSD that, to me, I didn't know that before. Coming home from church one Sunday, we stopped to get some pork chops at the grocery store, and some drunk was there, and I had my pork chops laying on the little conveyor belt to get checked out, and this guy was poking his finger in my pork chops. And now I'm in my suit. I'm coming from church. I've been communing with God. He's poking my pork chops, and I said, hey, man, don't do that, and he did it again, and I went right over his buddy and smacked that guy in the grocery store, and I'm saying to myself, where did that come from? All of a sudden, I snapped, and I realized, so you young guys that are Iraq, Afghanistan veterans, I want you to know that this thing may come on you later. You may not experience that when you first get out and come home. There is help. And the Veterans Service Office and the VA clinic here in town and Christian churches are, some of them may not understand where you're at or where you're coming from or what your problems are, but the Lord Jesus Christ really is the answer. And although I've been a pastor and one thing and another, I got to the point where I said, I've got to get this squared away in my head.
We know they teach us to put the uniform on, but they never teach us how to take it off.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're trained to survive. You're trained to fight the enemy. You're trained to work 36-hour days to do what you have to do. And then all of a sudden, you're out of there, and you got to put that away. But it never goes away. It's still right there. In fact, a lot of time, it's the motivator for other things that we do. Instead of drinking and drugs and all that, you use it as a motivator to push you to do better things, to be a part of the solution and not the problem.
Right.
And I've worked really hard to take my PTSD that way and utilize it with the Veterans Museum to honor our other veterans and our parents who are World War II veterans and things like that.
Well, that essentially is part of my motivation and strength for the Shasta Gas Propane, that we've been in business 24 years, and even during the administration prior to our President Trump. Even during that time when there was anti-business and the administration was saying, you didn't build that, that was part of my motivation to build that thing.
Right.
Even
I'm going to
stronger.
Show you that that's not the case.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Exactly. So, yeah, there are, you know, we can turn this experience in life into a building block for great things that are still possible.
Absolutely.
In our lives, and especially with our veterans, we've got skills, and we need to use them.
And we need to encourage them.
And encourage them.
And that's one of the reasons that we're doing this Battlefield PTSD program.
Right.
Because we want to give them an opportunity to step up and step across the boundaries of mental issues.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say illness. I don't think that PTSD is a mental illness. PTSD is dealing with extreme experiences.
Yeah.
And what they need is a hand up. They need an encouragement, a word of encouragement, an opportunity to be the person they were when they first went in, to get past the things that are tearing them down and holding them down. Yeah.
I want to say one thing. I was just reminded. My wife buys me stuff. And I'm a life member of the 1st Cavalry Division Association. So she buys me stuff about the 1st Cav, you know, and I've got the yellow patch with the horse head and the black bar across it. Well, she bought a blanket a while back, and it's a 1st Cav heavy quilt. Unbeknownst to her, it was dedicated to Afghanistan veterans.
Okay.
So if there's an Afghanistan veteran that served in the 1st Cav, I want to give you that blanket.
Well, give them a phone number for Shasta Gas Propane, and they can call you there.
You can call me actually on my cell
phone.
There
you go.
At 530-524-0402. If you're a 1st Cavalry Division member that served in Afghanistan, I have a blanket, and it is beautiful, and I want to give it to you.
That's a wonderful opportunity for somebody.
Yeah.
And they get to meet you also.
I don't know about that part,
well,
but that's so great.
You're an important person in our community with all that you've done, with what your business that you're doing, and I think that it's important for us to be able to honor you in that manner also. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expression.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Remember us, the Tula Kids? Well, we're back, and we would like to ask you a few questions.
Do you love TV? Do you like low prices? Call our daddy.
Hi, this is Doug Tooley with B&T Satellite. You know that by not calling the 800 number for your satellite needs, you get local service, faster installation, and most importantly, we speak your language. We ask the questions to ensure you get the right package for you and your family. We do big dishes, we do little dishes, we do internet dishes, we even do dish dishes.
Dad, I have never seen you do dishes.
That's because I do them most of the time.
So do I.
No, you don't.
Hey, kids, we're working here. Give us a call, and we'll help you figure out the best for your family. Whether it's dish services or local antenna help or streaming services, call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474. Or visit us on the internet at btsatellite.com.
B&T Satellite is a DISH authorized retailer. Restrictions apply. Ask for details.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, We provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Till they spill more precious blood, or we can sneak these cowards out and nip their slaughter in the bud. Adios, sweet home and family. I am off to fight a war that must be won. You will know why I'm going. When you see the snow-white rose of Arlington.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. And we have our guest this morning is Chuck Kenny, Vietnam veteran. And once again, thank you and welcome home, Chuck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for what you're doing in our community as a veteran and as a businessman. One of the things I think that is so important is that people need to know that successful businesses, many successful businesses in our community, are run by men and women who have served our nation faithfully and come back, and they've pulled their lives together and they've implemented their skills to be able to be part of a successful society. And you're a successful businessman in our community. You are honored as the number one business for veterans in the northern in the state of California.
State of California.
And congratulations on that. And so as we move forward, we want to talk a little bit about the men who served that didn't make it home from Vietnam, and you've been working with a program to go back and to deal with these situations, to honor these men and get them back home again. Tell us about that, Chuck.
Well, in 2009, I was reading the Aviator magazine from Vietnam Helicopter Pilot Association, and there was an ad in there by Military Historical Tours, and they do tours in Europe, Germany, France. They do tours in the islands of the Pacific, but the main thing I was interested in is they do tours of back to Vietnam for us Vietnam vets or family. Next time I go, I want to take my daughter. She wants to go. But everything got shut down this last year because of COVID, and Vietnam slammed their doors tight, but we're looking hopefully at going back again this April. But Military Historical Tours takes care of all the arrangements. And unlike when we were there the first time in the 1960s and 70s, sleeping under sandbags over our face and sleeping on rice dikes and things like that. The pilots never did that, by the way. We usually had some type of a bunk with a mosquito net. But nowadays, you can go to Vietnam, and in 2009, I was looking at these high-rise glass front hotels and office buildings. That country is building and booming like crazy. And we can go back now and go to all the places that we served at while we were over there. And I went back and actually went to the Quan Loi airstrip in 3 Corps where I was stationed. I went out to Tay Ninh over by Nui Ba Din and Nui Ba Ra, those mountains. And we went all the way from Saigon all the way to Hanoi. And on that tour, it was a 16-day tour. On that tour, we go to places where the men on that tour served. And you say, I want to go to a certain fire base. They can get you to that fire base.
Wow.
And you can see what it looks like nowadays. We actually ended up in Hanoi, where we went to the Hanoi Hilton. They, of course, have it all dressed up now, where it looks a lot better than it did when our guys were there.
Yes, that has a prison. A lot of people, they think of Hanoi Hilton, they think it's just a hotel. They called it
the Hanoi Hilton.
Yes, a term of endearment, but it was a hellhole, and it was a prisoner of war camp.
Exactly. So when you go on the tours now, you can go anywhere you want. Well, when I went in 2009, the first time, I've been back three more times since then. I traveled with a Medal of Honor winner, Mike Sprayberry, from the 1st Cav Division in 1968 in the Ashaw Valley. And what caused him to receive the Medal of Honor was that he went in and saved, essentially, a platoon of men that had been split apart, a bunch of them killed, a bunch of them wounded where they could not even move, and they were going to be killed the next day when the enemy came back in on them. And he went in overnight and saved a bunch of people and brought other people in to carry them out on litters and whatnot. Well, unbeknownst to them, they actually left three KIAs, three dead GIs, on the ground. Because it was so dark, they did not realize that those people were there. They couldn't see their hand in front of their face. It was so dark. Well, since 1968, he has been burdened with the fact that they left three GIs there. So in 2009, unbeknownst to me, he had some guys that were actually in that company at that time. They went back and had a memorial service, but they have committed to trying to find those three guys. Well, while we were on that trip, we went right around the corner, a quarter mile away, and there was a Loach helicopter from Bravo Troop, 1st of the 9th, 1st Cav Division, that was shot down the day after these guys were lost. Flew into the company and said, I'm going to go up and find your guys. And they said, don't go up there, you'll get killed, you know. And the crazy pilot said, well, you want your guys back, don't you? Yeah, we do. He took off and flew up there. They were immediately shot down, and the pilot and his two crew members were also lost. In 2009, we actually pulled up on the road above what we thought was that crash site. We slid down this hill on our tails because it was so steep, and bamboo and jungle and whatever else, animals and snakes that could have been there. And we were poking around down the hill, and I stepped on what I thought was a soggy piece of cardboard. Turns out that on the Loach helicopter, the air intake is hand-laid fiberglass. And what we did during Vietnam was we would paint a yellow square for Bravo Troop, 1st of the 9th. We'd paint a yellow square on that fiberglass, and then we'd write our call sign in it. My name for a year was Saber 14. That was my call sign. And so we would paint that yellow square on that fiberglass. 2009, we're poking around the heavy jungle, and I kick what I think is cardboard. I reach down and pick it up. It is hand-laid fiberglass. I turn it over, and the corner of that yellow painted square, I'm looking right at it.
Wow.
It's part of the helicopter. We know which unit. We know the type of helicopter. We know where those three men died right there. Well, in 2019, they actually started excavating that site, and they're now 3 feet deep. Last fall, they actually found a 3-foot section of the rotor blade. They have exposed it in their excavation. This is a regular archaeological dig that they're doing, and it's something like 50 or 100 feet wide, and it goes up and down the hill so that they can be sure that they're covering the area. The procedure that the North Vietnamese followed in those days was if an air crew member was killed, there was a crash or something, if they could get the bodies out, they would bury those bodies within a certain distance of that crash site. Usually they would essentially throw the bodies in a bomb crater where the dirt is all loose and whatnot, and then just kick dirt over those bodies. There are three existing bomb craters within 30 feet of this crash site. And we are expecting that when they excavate those bomb craters, we may find three American MIAs from 1968. We are in hopes that we're going to be able to have a funeral, and we're hoping that this excavation will end in a funeral and bring closure to the family. I would say that last fall, they actually reported sending some remains to Hawaii. Now, that's where they check on their DNA and whatnot. We don't know where those remains came from, but it's interesting that they found those remains at the same time that they have our excavation open. So we're hoping for the best.
Well, Chuck, I just want to say thank you for what you're doing for the memory of your Vietnam buddies, your brothers, for going back and being a part of this program and supporting it for the closure and to bring those guys home. It's not just closure for you and our local area, but it's closure for the families and a part of the closure for our nation, for us to be remembered and to bring those guys home again.
That's right.
I want you to come back. I want you to be a part of the program again. There's so many things that we need to talk about we didn't touch today. But thank you again. Welcome home, and thank you for your service to our nation.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You've been listening to Battlefield Expressions. Oh,